reunion audio?
You have a prepaid call. You will not be
I'm Anna Dalvey, and this is the Anna Dalvey Show. You might recognize my name as a character in a Netflix series, but now you get to meet the real me. On this show, I will dive into the concept of rules and talk with the people who create or break them. From art, politics, fashion, tech, finance, law, and more, The Anna Dalvey Show will share honest, unfiltered conversations that will question traditional notions of what's right and wrong, all recorded in my East Village apartment in New York while on house arrest. This week, we are joined by Brontes Cornell, who's most known as a writer, especially for his recent book, 100 Boyfriends. He's a filmmaker with movies on Criterion Channel. He's been a dancer for many years, and his band Gravy Train just had their 20th anniversary reunion show. He's become a key figure in culture, to the point that Interview magazine matched him up with Joan Waters. His work is vulgar yet sincere, dark while emotionally vast, anxiety-inducing and uplifting all at once. I love seeing a figure like him, someone traditionally on the outskirts of culture, getting mainstream attention. Hi, Brontes. Welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you on.
Hi, thank you. I love it.
I was just looking at your Instagram and I see you have an art show coming up in New York.
Yes. It's in the Lower East Side. Yeah, it's an art show about persona.
Yay. Are you going to be here in the
city? Yeah, totally. I'm about to fly out next week.
Oh, awesome. Maybe we should have done it in person. When did you first start writing?
I started writing like zines in the 90s. When I was like 13 or 14 is when I started doing my first zine. I think it just snowballed. I always wrote, like my mom wanted to be a writer. I remember she would get off of work and for years she would journal in this little notebook. It was some play she was writing that she never realized, but I don't know. I kind of always did it.
Did you always share your writing?
Yes, actually. I never believed in drafts or anything. Like, you know how some people like will like have their art and they hold it close to them because it's their most precious thing? I'm one of those really annoying fucks. So I'm always just like, no, like, look at this. It's mine.
Well, a lot of it just has so much journalistic quality. Do you like write for yourself? Are you like motivated by expecting a reaction from the audience?
I write like a theater kid. And so in my head, before I write something down, like I always have to be able to recite it like a monologue. Mm-hmm. So there probably is always this IQ of like where I'm waiting for the punchline to be or the dramatic pause. But then I don't know if that's like, maybe that just has more to do with me being like controlling, but but essentially, like, yeah, that I'm more often than not, I feel like my writing is something that I'm usually sharing with people, or my thoughts are usually shared.
How would you say your voice changed over the years?
I feel like when I was young, I wrote in a very fatalistic manner, but I believed at the end of it there would be hope. I don't know if I believe in hope so much anymore, but I exponentially believe that things actually will be all right.
Oh, yeah. What made you lose faith and hope?
What made me lose faith and hope? Well, you know, like, I think it's just you get older and so many things just do not turn out the way you thought. Or, you know, like when you're young, I feel like you're very attached to outcomes, like. You can almost feel it in your stomach, you know, if you feel like something's going wrong or something's not going the right way. But, you know, I feel like the older you get, you basically do not have control over most things, but most things like land about where they should.
Right.
Like think of all the times, like I always bet it against the times all of my worst fucking nightmares have totally come true in front of my face. But twice as many times, my worst anxieties never came true whatsoever, you know?
Yeah.
To be balanced, I'm probably equally prepared for both,
yeah.
I think.
Definitely. It's like kind of about accepting what you can and cannot control and just kind of trying to focus on the things that you can control. And yeah.
There's a lot of shit you cannot control. Like, it is crazy.
So what was it like when 100 Boyfriends became a hit?
It was really weird. I thought that some white boy from Manhattan was going to ask to marry me and fly me out and put me up in the apartment, and I was never going to have to work again. But, you know, I still fuck drug dealers in Oakland. So
it did not change much for you.
not at all. I mean, not materialistically, absolutely not. I mean, there's a lot more opportunities that come through. And I'm definitely grateful for that. But, you know, there's definitely like some very, very slight gains. But yeah, anytime you're successful, the only thing that happens is like people want you to write for them for free. So
did it change the way people like treated you, the ones who like known you for a while?
Well, no, because anyone that's been very close to me has seen me write for like 20 years. And so, you know, I'm sure they were finally happy to see me like land something in a very new way. Yeah. But the voice has stayed, you know, pretty much the same. And plus, you know, like you have brothers and sisters, right? And do you have brothers and sisters?
I have a little brother. Yeah.
You know,
but he's much younger.
Okay. Well, I think in like close sibling situations, it's like being in the art scene is like having siblings. You're always the age you met to those people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, no matter how, like, I could win a Pulitzer. There's plenty of friends of mine that'll just be like, oh, that's Brontes that used to sleep on my couch.
Yeah.
When he couldn't pay his rent time, and let's check up on him and see if he's eating, you know, like, it's weird with families. You never change. And, you know, I stick, even no matter how successful you get, you pretty much, I believe that you have to leave the party with who you came with. You know,
yeah.
So I tend to stick close to my family group or the people that knew me when there was nothing going on. Because if anything bad happens, that's who's going to help. And I don't know, it's not very turbulent there. It's like very modular, you know, the way I operate within my family dynamics.
Definitely. Yeah. And you have a pretty big family, right?
It is fucking crazy. Yes. There's so many of those fucking people.
Are they all based in California? Are they close to you? Like,
no. I grew up in Alabama, so all my family's in Alabama. Actually, my grandfather died the week before last, so I went back to Alabama for like the first time in like 4 years, and was at his funeral. Oh. And it was the funnest funeral I've ever been to. Like, I never saw a funeral that was actually about a celebration about life. And he was old as fuck. Like, that dude was old.
I think, yeah, more funerals should be about a celebration of life, because it's not a surprise that we all are going to die. So.
Well, some people, right, because it's like, I feel like in like artist communities like ours, like when our friends die, it's like an overdose or like poverty, it's always unexpected. Yeah. It's very rare that I've been to a funeral where someone just died of old age. Like, so like, everyone's kind of like, oh yeah, cool, awesome. Like, it's just like he had like 10 kids. He had 16 brothers and sisters, like 40 something grandkids. And I was like, oh, I grew up like in an African compound or something. Like, this is nuts. But
So how did you end up in Oakland?
Okay, so it's a kind of a long story. My grandmother's brother was a blues musician, and he came out here in the 60s. And so he ran a blues club. Actually, the club is up the street. My band plays there now. Mm-hmm. But he would come back to the Bay, and he had this white hippie girlfriend. And out of his like 30-something nieces and nephews, I was the only one that could play guitar, because his father, my grandmother's father, was also a blues musician. Mm-hmm. And so there's just a big music scene out here, way bigger than it was now. But it was big out here 20 years ago.
And you lived there your whole life?
I lived in Alabama, yeah, when I was,
No, I mean since you moved, sorry.
California, 20 years. I moved here when I was 19 years old. I, like, got in a van and just moved here. I'd never even visited. But I came here to play music. And I knew that my uncle was out here. My grandma's brother was out here. So it started that way, and then I just stayed.
Oh, that's nice. You ever thinking about moving anywhere else?
I sometimes really think I like would want to move to New York, but then I always feel like I should have done that when I was in my 20s, because now I just feel like I don't want to be like some washed up bottom moving to New York. Not that the other washed up bottoms don't and have a great time doing it, but I live in California and it's like, I don't know, I like produce and just like space and like Pacific Ocean air.
I spent some time in San Francisco and I really liked it. It's a great city. Not so much in Oakland, but San Francisco is great.
It's really beautiful. Like, it's really beautiful. I literally stare at beauty all day. And so, but I don't know, like, New York is just like so sexy and all my whole art life is there. I've been to New York like 5 times this year already.
Yeah.
And I have to go 3 more times before August, so.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I love the city. I think it's always kind of like, it's nice to know that you're always going to come back, that you're able to travel. I find this whole idea of like being stuck in one place kind of depressing, so.
Yes, very much so. We can't do that.
Have you ever been arrested?
Yeah. I'm gonna try to give like the easiest. I don't want to indict myself or this other person, but basically I was hanging out with this older art dude and we were both drinking and taking Percocets. We got into an argument and I guess I jumped on the hood of his car and ended up kicking out his window shield while he was in the driver's seat, like when we parked at his apartment. All I remember is like kicking in the window shield and crying and then I getting arrested. I stayed in jail all night. And then I was supposed to stay for court, but I didn't. So I guess, I mean, I might have a warrant in that state. But this was like a long time ago. Other than that, I've only ever been arrested for like anti-war protests. Because I'm a patriot.
Yay. I mean, it's an interesting experience.
I mean, yeah, like, I don't know. It's like, really, officer, with so much crime in the world, you're going to arrest me? Like, they hate when you say that.
Was it a long time ago? How old were you?
Oh, God. I was like, it was a long time ago. I had to be like something like 24 or whatever.
Oh, I think it's the best age to like get arrested in your 20s. I think it kind of gets sadder.
I know. Like, I'm so fucking,
the older it gets.
I'm like so fat and out of shape now. I can't fight a cop. Like, if a cop is like, I'm going to arrest you, I'm like, okay, fine. But when I was 24, I could run. I could fucking run my mouth. You know, it'd be more dynamic. So.
I mean, just even like in being in jail too. It's kind of like a huge, I don't know, like a boarding school or like a college campus. And there are so many young people. and like often it just reminds, it reminded me of high school.
Were you popular? Like,
I mean, it always kind of helps if when you have like this high profile case and you're being written about and like people are curious. It's weird because there's also turnover is so high in jail, less in prison. But definitely, yeah. Like, people just, yeah, people definitely knew who I was for better or for worse. It's not like necessarily something that you would want all the time. Like sometimes you just want to like be under the radar, but it was like an interesting experience. Just like having have to like coexist around so many people for such a long period of time. Like I grew up a single child. I have a little brother, but he's almost 13 years younger than me. So I kind of like grew up by myself. Yeah, it was wild to me.
What were most of the women in there for?
You just get to go to jail, prison for anything. That was right before, when I was at Rikers, that was right before Alvin Bragg passed this law where you don't get bail for nonviolent crimes. So a lot of people had bail back in the day. Not anymore. Now, if you committed like a nonviolent offense, they just let you go. in jail and prison are kind of like two widely different concepts, because in jail you are not convicted of anything and they just hold you until your next court date because you're either flight risk or or you could not afford your bail. And in prison you are convicted and they're like, they can make you do stuff. And I guess when I ended up at Rikers, this is the first time I kind of felt like old. I was 26. Because they're like, you're with like 18, 19 year old girls who like treat it like it's a sleepover.
Oh my God. Was there anything about it that was like fun? Oh my God. I'm so sorry. That's like such an offensive question, actually. Like, obviously, like, industrial complex, like, so.
Oh, no. I've been asked worse. Don't worry about it. I mean, the funny thing is, it's just people. So, a lot of people are having a lot of fun there. And they're, like, laughing and making jokes and making fun of each other. That's kind of the wild thing about whatever jail and prison. While, I guess, like, general population or, like, just people on the outside think, like, when you're in jail or prison, you just sit and think about, like, your crime all day. But it's just not always the truth. It's so crazy what a person can get used to, and especially people who are serving like long periods of time, they just create the whole little life in there. They have like girlfriends, they just like kind of plan their lives around like cooking, getting packages,
okay,
just, like, doing something. Yeah. So in prison you have like hot plates and you can get packages with food, you can get commissary.
Did you say cocaine?
You cut the food. Oh, no, cooking. I mean, there's cocaine there, too, yeah.
Okay, I was like, whoa. Oh, I can't wrap my head around it. I know that there was a girl, right during quarantine, this girl I grew up with, she went to jail, and I called up some friends because we had to put some money on her books. I didn't know you had to buy everything. Yeah. Like, they were like, she had to buy, like, toilet paper, shoes, this, that, the other.
Oh, yeah. It's like a huge money-making machine. They provide you, like, basic necessities. Everything else, you just have to buy. And if you don't have somebody who, like, will put money on your books, you just don't have it. Yeah, it's crazy. And the same for the phone calls, the same for everything. And it's usually, it's the families of the incarcerated people that get punished.
Oh, man.
Oh. Yeah. And it's pretty much impossible to get anything for yourself. Like, it's not like you can earn any money in jail or prison.
No, I've never been there. Like, I'm like the most dorm-like thing I did was, I guess when I moved here, I lived with 22 other people, like in a compound or a warehouse, you know, but that was, certainly wasn't jail. Like, you got me there.
How would you say like San Francisco like changed a lot in Oakland over the years? I just keep reading all these articles and there's so much being made, how much worse it's gotten, but I'm sure it's kind of over-exaggerated.
Well, you know, we were a bunch of tier two gentrifiers 20 years ago, too. Like, I don't know, like,
yeah.
It's always been like a weird transient place, certainly. Mm-hmm. But what I think is the main difference is, like, I feel like started 2000s when I got here at the end of .com, it still felt like this international hub. I would meet kids from all over Europe were coming here. I would meet like kids from Berlin, you know, weird London kids, kids from Spain, even like New Yorkers. And everyone thought that there was going to be like this art hub here, or like, you know, it was just sort of going to be like New York, you know, where there'd be access to industry. But the access to industry was just never here. We were always painting it that way, but it was never here. Cut to today, I feel like who you meet, it was once like an international hub, but who you meet now is just like, you know, a bunch of kids who moved from the Central Valley and their trajectory is they want to be on Drag Race one day. Like, that's their big dream. And to be quite honest, I think that's just as valid as all of us who thought we were going to be art stars, you know, like,
yeah,
without any plan or infrastructure. But it has definitely changed, like, kind of like the mood and timbre of it. But I think things should change, too.
Oh, definitely. Did you notice, like, the whole tech industry and tech people? Is it as bad as everyone says it is?
I guess. I don't know when it was ever that cool. I was always on such another side of it because I was just, like, I was hanging out, like, doing cocaine with white boys in punk warehouses. And I feel like we were just as much a menace on the landscape as anyone else. So I would never deeply, like, you know, come at anyone for whatever job they do. I don't know if I really care enough. Because for everyone that always paints this place as like, oh, no, it was just like a bunch of cool artists. And I was like, I don't remember all of us being artists. I remember some people doing art, and I remember, like, mm-hmm. everybody else just kind of, like, doing drugs and hanging out, which, again, is valid, but just, like, I don't know. Sometimes, like, these fucking hipsters in San Francisco, right, like, I remember when it first started happening, they wanted to paint their whole life like the fucking Trail of Tears because they had to, you know, move to Oakland, and it was just like, girl, like... Like, people were literally just like, yeah, I guess I'm gonna move to Berlin now. It's fine. Like,
but Oakland is cool, right? It's like kind of the same as Brooklyn and Manhattan now. Like, now Brooklyn is more expensive than...
Oh, you know, actually, more people are definitely moving into here because this is where everyone is now. I would not compare Brooklyn to Oakland because it's just San Francisco and Manhattan having things more similar. I could totally see that. Oakland and Brooklyn are just like weird, different. Like, it's just too fucking different. Fucking, if Oakland were anything like Brooklyn, I'd be getting way more Puerto Rican dick. And I'm just not getting enough Puerto Rican dick to call it fucking Brooklyn, so I won't. Oh, but you mean like art-wise, like, yeah, like, you know, we all play in post-punk bands. I'm wearing all black right now. It's groovy.
What kind of clothes are you into?
Oh, I like dress like a dyke from Portland. I try not to, but it's like, it's what's happened. I've been trying to read men's fashion blogs so I can update my look. If you know any good men's fashion blogs, please send them to me.
I've actually been asked to go on, God, let me see, menswear. There is one. It's actually a podcast, one of the few menswear podcasts.
Ooh.
Oh, gosh, I'll send it to you. I can't.
Send it to me, babe. I'm deeply into it.
Do you guys have, like, any cool brands that are just, like, from Oakland?
That's the West Coast is, like, not a fashion place. It's, like, oh, I will say this, though. My art wife, Sophia Wang, she, we started a dance company together, but she runs this thing called Microworks.
Yeah.
And it's like they're taking mycelium, like the mushroom material, and they're turning it into like wearable fabrics.
Yeah.
So she's like doing like a mushroom fiber brand, and they're pairing with this very, very, very big fashion label, but I'm not allowed to tell you right now because I'll get in trouble. I'll cut my allowance.
Throwing Fits. That's the, I think it's a podcast. Like one of the few podcasts.
That's a good name. That's a good name. I gotta write that down.
I am actually thinking of doing my own merch line. So just looking for some inspiration.
What's it giving? What's the theme? What's the zhuzh?
Just myself. Just kind of like, I'm not trying to feed like too much into the whole like Netflix caricature of me. Just kind of trying to find kind of like the perfect balance between the old and the new, but without kind of completely ignoring the past. So I don't know. Free Anna? I don't know. I'm still on house arrest.
I feel like my art show is kind of about that. It's called Anti-Alter Ego.
Yeah.
But it's about kind of how we write against narratives of ourselves that are portrayed. And so, like, when you see yourself on Netflix, do you feel like... Obviously, here's my thing. I write in TV sometimes, mm-hmm. or I've done it very seldomly. I think all TV is essentially horrible, and it's always meant to mutilate every true thing about... You know what I'm saying? I don't think there's ever really been a lot of very good adaptations. Yeah. Just because, you know, TV people just want the story and they want to write whatever the fuck they want. It's never about truth.
Yeah.
I generally think.
I agree too.
You agree?
Yeah. I think the saddest part is that, like, they say it's fiction or it's dramatized version of events, but people just believe it and, like, kind of take everything at face value. They just don't really, like, exercise too much critical thinking, because obviously nobody wants to hear the story where, like, oh, well, maybe it was not that crazy. Maybe it's, like, this did not really happen, so.
No, they can't.
But it's okay.
And that's the thing, too, because it's, like, even when you say it's, like, fiction, it's, like, in order for people to accept the story, it essentially has to be memoir.
Yeah.
This is what I was talking to, like, and my friend was saying, like, oh, gosh, I feel like I say this over and over again, especially, like, with, like, I don't know, like, women or marginalized identities, gay people, black people, whatever, whenever we speak about our story, like, in order for people to accept it or it to be authentic, it has to be completely memoir. Because if it's, you know, memoir, I don't know, I feel like they feel like they have more personal access to you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas opposed, I think that fiction has just as much, I don't know, moral value in teaching about the human experience, but...
Yeah.
I feel like people love when another person is indicted.
Oh, definitely. It's like always this schadenfreude, I guess. I think it's natural. It's not really like just unique to anybody. Just most people, like, even though if they don't like to admit it, there's just something about, it's like an accident and you can't look away, but you're not like, nobody's going to admit like, yeah, I love accidents. It's like something just in our nature. Is there anything that you reread or like that you keep rereading? Or do you like read anything for inspiration? That's actually very interesting to me personally. Like when you're, I don't know if you ever have writer's block. Maybe not.
I don't have like traditional writer's block. I always have ideas. I just have fucking fat ass laziness. It's like actually getting my body to the computer. The ideas won't shut up. Like, I'll be walking down the street talking to myself, you know, thinking about the ideas. But
do you take notes or like voice notes or anything? Or do you just kind of try to keep it? Yeah.
I take voice memos. I take notes. I used to like not like, I used to only write my stories down. Like I had to write them on paper first. And then type them. So there was just there was an intermediate so I could have at least one editing step, because I hate editing. Like, you know, editing down is just like the worst thing and I think it ever happened. But, you know, I take control of technology now. Like, I'm always scribbling on my phone. I'm always like Frankensteining a lot, because it's like there'll be a big creative block here and a big creative block there. And, you know, over the course of 2 weeks, I'm like, this all has to be one thing. How does this all come together? That type of weird editing shit.
Uh-huh.
That I think I'm releasing too much intel, but I feel like that's how my creative process rolls with that, which some people I think is a mess, which it is.
Have you ever played around with like ChatGPT or any like of the AI?
Oh, of the AI?
Yeah.
I'm like one of those people where it's like, it's amazing that I have like an email, you know, like I go on Instagram, like that's the full, I've never really been on Twitter, like Facebook, like even getting on this interview today, like I literally sat there in the Google Hangout for almost 10 minutes because I didn't know I was supposed to click the link under it. And then I had to download something and I was just like, fuck. Seriously, it's like I type scripts on my computer and watch porn on it. Like, that is the full extent of what I do. Like, I don't even really fucking watch Netflix.
Well, do you want to talk about your latest book? and tell our listeners who are not familiar with it a little bit about it?
Okay, there's a lot of latest things. 100 Boyfriends came out 2.5 years ago, and it's the story of, like, not 100 men, but how one man can feel like 100 ghosts. Yeah. That's how we say it. And that's been doing really well. In fact, it started off as a film series called 100 Boyfriends Mixtape before it was a book. But it has several different lives of its own. But coming up, I've signed a 3-book deal with FSG, MCD. And so I have 2 poetry books coming out and a sci-fi book coming up.
Which one is, like, your favorite medium?
You know, right now, I would have to say probably playing music, because it's the thing that I get to do the least. And what I noticed, I spent a lot of years talking shit about playing music, but it's the least amount of people that have to hold my hand. Like, I feel like if I write something now, it has to go through, like, 10 different steps and a long chunk of time before it's out in the world.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I don't know, music, it's way more immediate and you can just do your thing. And I'm needing some immediate gratification right now.
I'm, like, trying to write my book too, and I'm writing a diary. And sometimes it's just really hard to kind of trying to get the audience, like, trying not to think about them. Do you think, like, that helps you, or that's more of a obstacle?
I can't ever picture who the fuck my audience is, because I'll be writing for who I think is, basically I'm always writing for myself, but then, like, I don't know, one week you'll get, like, there'll be 10 people being like, I love that book, and they're all just, like, white women in their 40s who are just like, you know, like, I don't know, I'm like, what did you like about the book? And they're just like, you know, women ain't shit, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, some random fucking young person from New Zealand. Or, you know, it's like, our voice reaches a lot of weird places. So it's hard to ever really think about who exactly you're talking to or who'll take the most from it, I think.
So what about poetry? Like, do you find it more difficult to just, like, write prose or poetry? Or is it, like, do you have a favorite genre?
I was like, hey, The poetry I write is probably closer to, are the confessional poets still a thing? Confessional poets, I'd say language poets. I gotta quit saying language poets because no one's ever actually taught me fully what that term means. With my other work, I feel like sometimes you have to just be, like, writing your truth into a scroll just so earnestly and laboriously all the time. It takes up so much mental space. Sometimes I like that poetry is just like, it's almost harder to write poetry, I think, because it's like you have to make all these broader points, like, connect in this really intense way.
Yeah.
But I think it's good to just build another synapse sometimes, because I don't think anyone should write too much of one thing at all. Like, can you imagine only TV writing the rest of your life? Wouldn't you, like, kill yourself? It's like, But if you can mix that with, like, some poetry and some other shit here and there, you have a well-balanced thing. So,
I wish I could write poetry. I don't think I don't have it in me.
Well, not with that attitude.
Maybe I should try.
Yeah. I think a lot of people would buy your poetry book, actually.
As I'm sure you all know by now, I went to prison for almost 5 years. I bounced around so many prisons and jails. One of the hardest parts was moving. Having to get a new routine every several months after every move was taxing mentally. Routine is important. And making a routine of talking with other people about what you're struggling with is some of the best medicine. These last few years have been unprecedented for everyone. You've been on your formal lockdown. I've been on mine. We've all had our mental health challenged more than ever. Getting help is so, so important. It's not easy. It's hard to find a therapist. It's expensive. It's weird and uncomfortable. Cerebral makes it really easy and affordable. Cerebral is a 100% online mental health service that offers therapy and medication management for anxiety, depression, insomnia, stress, burnout, and more. It's all online. You do a brief questionnaire and they match you with a therapist. If one doesn't work, you get another one. It's one of the few services that provides medication management online through a licensed provider if clinically indicated. It's also really affordable. It's about one-third the price of traditional therapy. Our listeners will receive an exclusive 50% off the first month of therapy by going to cerebral.com/Dalvi. That's cerebral.com/Dalvi for 50% off your first month of therapy. For quality mental health care that's accessible and affordable, join Cerebral today. What about the art show? What exactly is it going to be in New York in June?
I always have to say it right. No, I'm not saying it right. Hold on. The art show is going to be at Trotter and Schuller, which is at 168 Suffolk Street. It's from June. It goes from June 8th to July 8th, Tuesdays through Saturdays, 12 through 6 p.m. And so the show is called Anti-Art Alter Ego, and it's about writing against persona. And so there is paintings, there is Xerox print art, and there's self-portraits with text intervention, examining who we are becoming and unbecoming without our permission.
Huh. How long did it take you?
I started the show when I was in grad school. So I started the show in 2020 when I was at UC Berkeley. I got my MFA in conceptual art practice at UC Berkeley in 2020.
You think you're a good student?
No, I'm literally the fucking worst. I'm one of those people, like, you really have to grill me or I really might just read the introduction of the book. I'm great when it, okay, here's the thing. Like, as in school is the case in my life, I'm great at putting out. Like, yeah. The teachers love me because, like, my output is, like, there. I don't half-ass that a lot.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's, like, you know, sometimes I'm very much, like, fuck art, let's dance. Like, theory is what always grounds me when it's hours and hours and talking about theory. That's depressing. But to be honest with you, I kind of miss the school setting right now. And so at the end of the year, I think I'm going to apply for a PhD program somewhere so I can go somewhere.
Oh, really? And you did it in person, right?
Yeah.
How? Did you meet anybody interesting?
Oh, they were all really cool. Like, it was like, because in my program too, there was this guy like in his late 50s that was just like coming back to school. He had been a painter all his life and he just came back to school just to, I don't know, learn some new language and be in converse with other artists. And, you know, that's the type of shit that's cool. Or, like, people, there were also people in the program who had, like, never made art before. They were just, like,
yeah,
experimenting and trying something out, which I also thought was really cool. And I don't know. I was, you know, I feel like in a lot of ways that program probably saved my life. I just hit such a wall. And, you know, I think it's good whenever people can, like, be in an incubator with other people and just, like, talk some ideas. You know, that's really what you paid the money for.
Yeah.
Just to slow down time around you and, you know, give yourself permission to try some shit or be bad at some shit. And so I was happy for that.
Do you think it was, like, inspiring? Did you get any ideas from, like, other people?
All the fucking time? Or, like, or just, you know, because it's like sometimes when you like make art like around just your friends, like you really get stuck in these really fucking crazy echo chambers, and going into a situation where you had zero relationality to anybody,
yeah,
like as maddening as that can be, or the instances where you feel like you could be misunderstood or misread, certainly that's high.
Mm-hmm.
But also really just getting a scope of like what you look like to somebody who doesn't have your set of references.
Yeah.
It's like, it's very eye-opening. It's very awesome and humbling. And I don't know, it made me reapproach and redirect, which I probably should have hit that reset button years ago in some aspects. But better late than never.
I've heard you were peed on in one of your movies.
Yeah, of course.
What was that like?
Well, because that movie was like made during quarantine, right? Or and I was okay. First of all, I don't even like getting peed on. I just did it for the camera, and it was more in conjunction with the fact that supposedly our president at the time had a video where he was getting peed on.
Yeah,
and I was thinking about like what is shock value anymore, and just the fact that this gnarly thing can be floating around and you'll still be president of America. Also, right as everyone was having their OnlyFans, right as everyone was just like, everyone was fucking on the internet, you know what I'm saying? And so I personally am someone who always likes to put pornography in videos, not to be erotic, but strictly to be annoying.
Yeah.
I felt like it was just annoying enough a thing to put in there. And obviously it worked, so...
What was the craziest thing you've done for a sake of art?
I got fucked by a unicorn in this movie when I was 20 years old.
Aw, how was that? Would you do it again?
It was like the horn was made by that sex company Good Vibrations, but it was still pointy. So I remember I bled a little bit. Keep in mind, when I did that scene, I was still an anal virgin. I had never been in the ass before. And so the person dressed like a unicorn totally fucked me, and I was like on a bunch of acid in the backyard and like a shit ton of makeup, and I was like, wow, I live in San Francisco. but yeah. And I've done some fucking crazy shit. Like, I've gotten some crazy shit. But, like, getting fucked by that unicorn was nuts. I remember I called my mom. I called my mom next day, and I was just like, well, yo, like, I got fucked by a unicorn. And my mom was just like, well, you know, some people fuck children and animals. Like, a unicorn is art. And I was like, oh, wow, totally. And I felt good for about a day or two. But then I was just like, damn, like, a unicorn. But now I think it's fucking hilarious. And when you think about it, Cookie Mueller got fucked by a chicken. You know, and had a great art career afterwards. So if Cookie Mueller can get fucked by a chicken, certainly I can fuck a unicorn.
Right.
I mean, I think. I don't know. Tell me if I'm wrong.
No, I think you're on the right path here.
There we go. Fuck it. I would totally do that again. I would do it again, but better.
Well, it's never too late.
As of now, no, I don't think it's too late. I think I have about 5 years on the time clock. So, yeah, I know you know movie people. So if you can get that cooking, I'll do the unicorn part too.
I'll keep you posted. I can definitely pull some strings.
I love that.
Do you have any tips for me on like for my art career and me being on house arrest? It feels like,
oh my God, honey,
you would just be brimming with ideas.
I don't think you need any advice. I think you got it in the bag. What I do think you should do is an OnlyFans, but an OnlyFans where you only read your diary from jail, but only do it in like 15 second clips so people don't get too much of it. And then, you know, at the end of the series, when you get like up to like, you know, an hour's worth of readings from those 15 seconds clips, then fucking sell the script.
I should.
The real question is, who would you get to play you?
I don't even know. Somebody who like does not resemble me at all.
I like, okay, not to like be weird or whatever, this thing I have is like, there's this guy, this art guy in New York, where it's like, for years, I've only ever known him to have like this hokey East Coast accent, but then I learned that he was totally from Germany. Like, he's like, no, but like, he didn't come to America until he was like 22 or 23. Like, he should totally still have a German accent, but he was just hanging around these New York queens and picked up the lingo. And, like, we were making out in bed, and he all of a sudden slipped into this German accent so crazy and precisely to where now when I hear a German accent, I feel like people are, like, all Germans are making up the accent, and they really just, like, talk like Californians or something. Is this true?
No, I don't think so. How would you, like, describe my accent?
It sounds like German.
Really? Do I sound anything like Netflix, Julia Gardner?
I don't think so. I
sound anything like her.
How do you feel about her voice? Come on, be honest.
Well, I feel like they just completely exaggerated it. Also, to be fair,
it is a drama.
To be fair, my accent probably changed, and they didn't really have much to work with, just because, like, I never really gave any interviews, like, before I got arrested. Then I was in jail this whole time. There were probably maybe, like, just a couple of things when I came to Rikers and they filmed me. And then I just, like, I used to travel the whole time. So, like, I never really lived here until I got arrested. And I was just in jail this whole time. So I barely speak any other language. So I'm sure it changed. It's hard to, like, judge for myself. But, yeah, I'm just kind of trying to take it with, like, a grain of salt. And it's not a documentary. And I feel like whoever just believes this is what happened, just, like, also... It's an idiot test in a way. Like,
you know, I feel like if since we're common, more people would have it. So,
so it's like always a good, it's interesting to see what people choose to believe. So it's like the same thing. It's like, don't believe everything you read, don't believe everything you watch, especially if it says. It's a dramatized version of real events. So I don't know. Are you good at accents?
Absolutely not. And like part of me too is like, I feel like even when I was a kid in Alabama, I went to this particular kind of, they called it blue ribbon schools at the time. And they made sure that we didn't have Southern accents. Mm-hmm. Because they were worried about us being employable and like Southern people, quote unquote, sound stupid. So they kind of, you know, they really, this was the 90s and they really kind of, they were really adamant about us having kind of a neutral American accent. But then, of course, mm-hmm. I moved to California when I was 20. And now, like, I feel like I was always in my head making fun of a Valley Girl accent. But now it's like I actually speak that way. And it's like, I feel like I have a vocal fry and like sometimes I ask questions like I'm asking a question or everything becomes like I'm asking a question, like up speaking so real. But then in my head, I still hear my Southern grandmother when I talk. So it's like, I don't really know who I am. Mm-hmm. Like, don't you feel like sometimes I feel like there's four different accents and people competing? And especially when you watch too, I think it's like maybe like a globalization thing because like when I watch reels or stories from all over the world, it's like everyone can mimic a certain type of accent and the yeah. neutral American accent is always the most mimicked. And so they were asking British people to talk like an American. And I've only ever heard Americans try to imitate British people. I've never heard British people imitate Americans. And when I heard what British people heard, I was like, no wonder the world hates us. We sound disgusting. It's weird.
I feel like it's just kind of natural to want to sound like people you're surrounded with. Like when I was in jail, I just picked up on so many words I would never even like dream of saying. And then I got out and then I'm talking to like my friends and I were like, oh, well, it's like, is this a jail word? I was like, you best believe it. Or like you're dragging it. Like I know all kinds of words. I really like you dragging it. I never used it before I went to jail. I feel like it's just, it just describes it so accurately. I think it's just such a great word. I wish more people would use it. It's like you're dragging it. It's like exactly.
Oh my God.
Hi everyone, it's Anna. I want to talk to you for a moment about the benefits of microdosing. I'm sure some of you listening to this show are enjoying it a whole lot more because you decided to microdose. The benefits are overwhelming, especially for artists and creatives. If you don't know the term, microdosing involves taking small amounts of a psychoactive substance like THC. It doesn't get you high, but it does open you up to the world and flood your brain with serotonin so you feel good and are receptive to others. For creatives, the right dose will help you lock into a project and reach a flow state. Our show today is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. My friend just bought Microdose Gummies and they loved them. One of my girlfriends, who's usually a bit of a hot mess, she's one of the most anxious people I've ever met. So she took half of a gummy for anxiety and she was the most normal I've seen her in a long time. She was just totally chill and relaxed, all without feeling lazy or hazy. They also tasted really good, she said. Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code DELVEY, D-E-L-V-E-Y, to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description, but again, that's microdose.com, code DELVEY.
Do you like any, like what artists are you inspired currently by?
I always told myself that I wanted Miranda July's career, but like with like four times the money. but also, to be honest, what I really want is Miranda July's Instagram. Like sometimes I'll be looking at it and I'm just like, I should wear more like high fashion clothes and do like weird dance improvs in my dressing room. You know, my Instagram is basically a lot of elevated ho shit and unelevated ho shit, you know? But I'm trying to make room for more art. Who else's career would I like to have? Basically, if I could just like, I want the Met Gala notoriety without ever having to go to the Met Gala. Like I want more fancy gowns and clothes, and I want to walk in a couple more runway shows, but anything beyond sociality after that, like, fuck that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would love to play just, like, basement punk shows the rest of my life and just be, like, cool. But if I could just get on a couple of runways and be on a couple of designer send-to lists, then, yeah, I'll consider the job well done. You know, I've never really asked for much.
No, you have not. So what do you think of the whole Met Gala thing?
Well, it just always... Okay, it only reminds me of how completely out of fucking touch I am, because every time they do the red carpet, I feel like I only know about 10% of the people who are there. And, like, everybody else, I'll just, like, unless there's, like, a prompter and a Wikipedia link next to it, I just don't fucking know. And sometimes I think I'm just, like, did I just, like, do a bunch of drugs and now all the fucking space in my brain is, like, filled? Like, because it's just, like, because I remember there was one bitch, I was just, like, yo, like, who is this skinny white girl? And my friend was just, like, yo, like, that's Liv Tyler. And I was, like, Liv Tyler still gets invited to the Met Gala? Like, that's lit. I was happy for her, but I'm really old and out of touch in a lot of key ways. And every time I look at it, I just feel like that gap widens and widens with every year. So I tend to try not to catch the Met Gala coverage because it shows me how far I'm sinking into this coffin, this cultural coffin.
Well, what do you think, like, between kind of the separation between, like, is it fashion or if it's just costume?
Oh, that's a good point. Like, it would have to be costume, right?
Yeah, I guess it's different for how everybody just interprets the theme. But it's kind of like one of the few events where you can just show up, like, wearing something completely ridiculous and people will clap. something that's not supposed to be an item of clothing. If you got a chance to decide on a theme, what would you like to make it?
Oh, college loan default. Wrap your hands around that one.
That would be a very funny one.
Or like GoFundMe. Like, what would people's GoFundMe outfit look like?
Just like all this.
Yo, they should do one called House Arrest and see like what people do with like the bracelets.
Yeah, maybe we should do one.
I think that's cool.
Who else do you think I should interview for my podcast?
Who else should you interview for your podcast? I definitely think you should get like a couple of food people. The fucking whoever, who is the leader of like the like the National Anarchist Party? Have you tried financial doming yet?
No. I'm not at that stage in my journey yet.
But don't you think you'd be like good at it?
I might be.
Oh, that's another Met theme gala, financial doming, like.
Yeah. Julia Fox would love that one. Would you like to ask me anything?
What's your sign?
What? Yes.
No, I'm like horrible at it, but that's something I like feel like I'm always asking people like, what's your sign and how do you feel like this has affected your choices in life?
Nobody ever guesses my sign right. It's Aquarius. I don't know.
Oh, because it's so muted. I don't think you come off as like that. Well, you're definitely chill. Like if we were talking, if I just met you on the train and we were talking, I would never guess.
Say it.
I would never guess about your like colorful life history. I guess no one would suggest mine either. Like, oh, because they would never be like, you would never meet me on the train and be like, oh yeah, that guy got killed by a unicorn. And I'd be like, oh, she has a whole Netflix thing. Like, oh, this is what they call perfect strangers. See, this is another thing I hate about the information age. We both mutually know way too much about each other already. Like,
it removes the mystery.
Let's still make this class. I think you're cool.
I think you are very exciting too.
Oh, thank you.
We should definitely come up with some collaboration. I think. let me give it some thought.
I think you're gonna land both of us in trouble. Or I might. So
I mean, it's what else can happen to me?
I'm down. I'll follow you straight to jail.
I bet you're gonna have to. Yeah, like you could have so much fun in jail. It's not the worst place on earth. For a short period of time. You don't want to stay there for too long, but if you know you're like not staying there for too long.
I mean, listen, I can see people like, you know, adapting to wherever.
It's a fun experience. Have you seen like Orange is the New Black or any of the jail shows?
I never watched it.
Me neither. So I went to jail like being a completely blank slate. I knew nothing. So it just surprised me.
How long were you in there?
I was at Rikers for 19 months. And then I was upstate in prison for like 20, 21 months. Yeah, and I was in ICE jail for like another 18 months. So I have quite an experience. I was also briefly in jail in LA in Twin Towers because I got extradited from California to New York. So they arrested me in Malibu and they held me until New York came to pick me up.
Like 3 years. This is like 3.5 years.
Pretty much, yeah. A bit longer. 3 years and 4 months for like my criminal case and like 18 months for ICE.
Oh my God.
But I should write a guide to jails and prisons of America.
But aren't you worried about there might be like some abolitionist like thought people who might?
I had CEOs who like begged me to write a Yelp review for different facilities.
Oh my God. Don't do that.
I'll tell us as a person who had sex with the unicorn.
I mean, well, okay. You know, it's weird. It's weird, but what I did won't land you in jail. Like, or will it, though?
You never know. Well, it was so nice talking to you. Is there anything else you want to talk or address? And please let us know, where can we follow you?
The best way to follow me is on Instagram, Brontez Purnell. And no, I think that's really cool. And I'm glad you like took time out to talk to me. This was rad.
Thank you so much for taking your time. And I'd love to come up with some idea for us to collaborate sometime very soon. I think people would love it.
Let's fucking party.
Of course. Have a good night. Bye.
You too, my love. Bye.
I'm on house arrest, so I would have really loved it if Brontez were here in person instead of talking to him on my computer. I think we would have a really fun time together. Maybe I'll get him back here for round two sometime soon.
What the hell?
The Anna Delvey Show is a Reunion Audio and Audio App production. The show is produced by Sean Glass, sound supervised and co-produced by John Eckhouse.
And it makes you say, hey!
Reunion audio?